We've been holding off on inviting Christopher P. Baker back on Travel with Rick Steves for a few years now. We thought we'd wait until American policy prohibiting travel to Cuba looked like it might be changing. But it's looking like Cuban society is changing faster than the U.S. policy on its embargo. Chris Baker is probably the foremost expert on travel in Cuba. He's traveled there more than 70 times in the last 3 decades, and his works about the island include the Moon Guidebook to Cuba and his coffee table book about a motorcycle trip across the island called Mi Moto Fidel. Chris's latest project is collaborating on a documentary with actor David Soul about the restoration of Ernest Hemingway's 1955 Chrysler New Yorker, which was recently rediscovered in Cuba. Chris, welcome back to Travel with Rick Steves.
Rick, it's a delight to be back with you.
What is it about Cuba that gets into people's blood?
It's just a fascinating place. It's a time warp. It seems to be trapped in the 50s, and of course it's a communist nation in the Caribbean. And it's been off limits to Americans essentially for 5 decades. Once you get there, you experience this incredibly profound culture, music and dance everywhere you go. But the setting, the Hollywood setting, is just incredible, absolutely marvelous.
There's something fertile about it. I mean, the storms, the physical storms, and also the political storms. There's this churningness about Cuba.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's only 90 miles from Key West to Havana, and yet the Florida Straits, in a sense, are the widest, deepest moat in the world.
Yeah.
There's this incredible antagonism that's been entrenched now for 5 decades between Washington and Havana, and of course between Havana and Miami. I don't see any change to that anytime soon, even though Raul Castro is making overtures to the USA.
Right. Of course, Cuba has a slave heritage. How does that impact Cuba today, and how is the slave heritage treated or taken advantage of by the communist government?
Well, obviously, on the eve of the revolution, there was incredible racism in Cuba, and the revolution has gone a long way to eradicating that, at least on an institutionalized level. It's raised the black underclass up. There's tremendous poverty in Cuba, as there was before the revolution, but the black underclass has really been the beneficiary. And in that sense, you find perhaps a greater loyalty to the revolution amongst the blacks themselves. And of course, they have this profound musical heritage that is, it's a quintessential element of what travelers to Cuba love about being there.
I think it's easy to be romantic about Cuba and all these beautiful things to talk about, the cars, the music, the nice rum drinks. What's the dark side?
Well, of course, it's a communist nation that is very restrictive in terms of the human rights as we speak of them. Freedom of speech doesn't really exist there at all. You have an economy that's pretty much been trashed, both by the U.S. embargo, but principally by the fact that the state took over the entire economy and has not done a good job of running it ever since. And it pays workers in Cuba a pittance. And so you have no real capital base amongst the populace in Cuba.
You had a society that was sort of an elite economy back in the days of Batista. Then you had a society that was subsidized by Russia so it could be a showcase in the Western Hemisphere. And then Russia dropped out when the Soviet Union fell apart and the American embargo has battered its economy. And then you got the inherent problems of having an economy that ignores the laws of supply and demand. It's pretty tough for Cuba, no matter how smart and hardworking they are, to become an affluent nation.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And we can't understate the importance of the dependency upon the Soviet Union for 3 decades until the Soviet bloc collapsed in 1991. But it's very important also to recognize, too, that Raul Castro, who came to power after 2006 when Fidel was taken seriously ill, is a different, it's cut from a different cloth than his brother, and he has been initiating what I would call significant reforms that are trying to stimulate private enterprise in Cuba. And the past year alone, I've seen dramatic change. The Obama administration has lifted restrictions on the amount of money that can be sent by Cuban Americans to their families, and also it now permits any U.S. citizen to send money to Cuba in support of private enterprise. And what you're seeing in Havana particularly is a new middle class. You're seeing nightclubs, restaurants, etc., that are really booming, and it looks in parts as if South Beach has now come to Havana.
Wow.
I'll be back in Cuba in a couple of days and be touring the entire island, and I'm very enthused to hopefully find that this kind of new pattern of the evolution of private enterprise for the first time in six decades is now spreading beyond Havana. We'll see.
Wow, this is pretty radical. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Christopher Baker. And Christopher is the author of The Moon Handbook to Cuba. So, Christopher, people love Cuba, but of course, Americans have to deal with the American embargo that limits who can go there and how and why and everything. Of course, Europeans and Canadians find Cuba's the number one Caribbean destination for them when they're dreaming about a Caribbean vacation. Americans have to be more careful. In previous times, you could go to the Yucatan or Canada and just hop on a plane and go there. But these days, you're going to end up with a stamp on your passport and conceivably be in big trouble with our government. What's the latest on Americans who just want to go to Cuba and get to know the culture and get to know the people and have a good time? How can we do it?
Sure. Well, it's still theoretically possible to do it that way. Canada, Cancun, Central America was a popular route for me that I took many times. Back in a few years ago, you could actually pull up the airline websites and make a booking with Copa or Grupo Taca, for example. These days, you'll find that they do not display their Cuba routes on their websites. So it's become a little more difficult, not least because you can't use your credit cards. The good news, in a sense, is that the Obama administration does not seem to be policing this with the same thoroughness that the Bush administration did. And so it's more likely that anybody who chooses to take that route could get away with it. The other side of the coin, however, is that Cuba, which never used to stamp your passport, seems these days to be stamping almost everybody's passport, and it's always on page 16, so the U.S. authorities know that.
So, Christopher, what's the worst scenario? I decide to go to Cuba like hippies did 20 years ago. They stamp my passport. 2 years later, I'm trying to go somewhere. They see I've been in Cuba. Is there a big fine?
Well, potentially on paper, there is a big fine at $60,000. However, nobody has been fined. In fact, there are only two people have ever been fined through the judicial system. A lot of people have received notifications of intent to fine, which is a totally different animal. But there's no judicial process.
But I'm a law-abiding American citizen, and I want to go legally from the United States. And I understand Obama has opened up a way, this kind of people-to-people program. Explain that.
Well, this is the way to go because everybody can do so legally. Now, everybody has this ability to pick and choose according to their desire, be it a weekend program or something lengthier and more in-depth like National Geographic offers. The people-to-people programs, we're doing incredible meetings. For example, I'll give you some examples from the National Geographic program. We go to visit my friend Julio Munoz in the beautiful colonial city of Trinidad. We call him the Horse Whisperer. You're in his 18th century home, you're learning about the multiple businesses he has, and then he brings in a horse inside the home, inside the salon of this beautiful house, and he describes how he is trying to teach Cuban peasants who kind of brutalize their animals how to have a more loving, affectionate interaction with their animals, that they don't need to give them pain to have their animals respond, etc. It's a fascinating experience. That's a classic example of what a person-to-person or people-to-people trip would include.
So as an American tourist, I need to book a tour, and legally, I need to be with a tour in Cuba for the purpose of meeting people and having this cultural exchange. Is that the idea?
That's exactly right. It's all about cultural exchange.
Talk to me about the flight from Miami to Cuba. There's just some unique things about actually flying from Florida to Cuba.
Yeah. Well, there's no scheduled flights as such. There are scheduled charter flights, and only licensed individuals can board those flights to Cuba. It's a 40-minute flight. If you get a license, you mentioned them before, journalists, religious folks, and of course the people-to-people tour groups, you get on a flight, leave Miami, and 40 minutes later you touch down in Havana.
Of course, when we go to Cuba, you're going to check out Havana, but you got to get out of the big city and into the countryside. Talk about the wonder of a small town experience for the American visitor to Cuba.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is where the real Cuba is, and there are no restrictions on travel around Cuba by the Cuban government. You can rent a car and do whatever you want. If you're a U.S. traveler, obviously you're going to be there on a people-to-people program. And you would go out to a place like Trinidad. I already mentioned this beautiful colonial city, the city of Cienfuegos, for example, created by French immigrants in the 19th century, has its own unique flavor. But out there in the countryside, you're still going to see ox-drawn plows. Mm. It's a cowboy culture. Half the vehicles in the country are probably drawn by oxen or horse. It's a time warp. Havana's its own time warp, a 50s time warp. You go to the tobacco country of Vinales, go to see the farmers there growing tobacco that goes in to make the finest cigars in the world, then you are being taken back two entire centuries.
Amazing that it still exists. And my worry when I see the news is that the beautiful little countryside villages and hamlets of Cuba would just be ravaged by hurricanes that keep sweeping through. What does it feel like? What are the remnants, what are the souvenirs left by these hurricanes?
Well, it's rather tragic that Hurricane Sandy, which struck New York and New Jersey last year, actually touched down in Santiago de Cuba. That's the oldest city in Cuba and the original capital. And it devastated that city. I was there just 4 months ago, and it made me weep to see entire top floors of the houses, buildings around the Central Plaza gone. Mm.
But in the countryside, do you have a sense that life just goes on and they've always had hurricanes, or does it feel like it's a constant war zone?
Well, it is a constant, particularly in the tobacco country of Vinales in the west of Cuba, because half of the hurricanes that hit the island come up from the Gulf of Mexico over this area. Cuba has a world-class evacuation policy, and they're very well trained in handling hurricanes. But, of course, it's devastating, and devastating to the local economy, to the lives of the locals.
Yeah. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Cuba with Christopher Baker, the author of The Moon Handbook to Cuba. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Cheryl's calling in from Long Beach in California. Cheryl, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much. How soon do you think we're going to be able to have affordable tours so that we don't have to do the people-to-people and we don't have to fly out of Miami? I'm in Los Angeles. I don't need to fly to Miami to get to Cuba.
Well, hi, Cheryl.
Hi.
I don't envisage any time soon that we're going to see the travel restrictions lifted because the president no longer has the ability to do so. It requires congressional approval for that, and currently the balance of power on the Cuba question still resides with hardline Cuban Americans.
Okay, thank you.
That's kind of sad news.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man. Well, keep up to date on these creative options that tour guides can offer, because there's a lot of independent travel that you can do within the context of one of these people-to-people tours, isn't there, Christopher?
Right, and I have looked at them, and they seem quite a lot more expensive than if I were able to just hit the country and read the book and go on my own.
Well, then you can talk to some people who have gone through Canada and consider that route.
I'm not quite that brave.
Sure. Why do you want to go to Cuba? There's all sorts of other islands in the Caribbean.
Well, it really relates to when I was about 8 years old. My family went down to Miami on a three-week vacation, and my dad said if he'd realized then how cheap it was to go to Cuba, we would have gone. And so now, as an adult, an older adult, it's like, well, that would have been fun because that's something that Dad wanted to do. Plus, I have a lot of friends who are Cuban.
Well, Christopher, the Europeans and the Canadians seem to enjoy it on their own, don't they?
Oh, everybody who goes to Cuba has a fantastic time. So many people go to Cuba. These are world travelers. They go to Cuba and they go, wow, that was one of the best trips I've ever done. I want to go back.
I have never heard of anybody who's gone to Cuba that didn't come back with a very positive experience. Cheryl, thanks for your call, and I hope you can get to Cuba someday.
Thank you.
Christopher P. Baker is the author of The Moon Guidebook to Cuba, and he specializes in Caribbean and Latin American travel writing and photography. He leads tours for National Geographic Expeditions, Lindblad Expeditions, and Moto Discovery. And Chris won the Lowell Thomas Award from his travel writing peers as the best travel journalist of the year. His website is ChristopherPBaker.com. Christopher, when we think about Havana, talk about just the classic Havana. Is it still there? I mean, the old car scene, it seems like someday that's got to fade away. Do you still get that sort of Hollywood image of Havana?
You know, it's the first thing that hits you when you arrive at the airport. All the cars outside the airport are these 50s classics. And when I first went to Cuba in 93, I imagined that 20 years on they would no longer be there, but they are. They're still running around. Many of them are running around with diesel and tractor engines, etc., and may not be what you think they are. They're all Frankenstein's monsters. There are very few of them are originals, but some of them are in wonderful condition. And, of course, The number of visitors, it's 2.7 million foreign visitors last year, by the way.
Wow.
They're supporting people by utilizing cars for their private tours of the city, etc. And so that's another reason why these old cars are kept going. I did it, by the way, Rick. I did a coffee table book called Cuba Classics, a celebration of vintage American automobiles. And
That's great. Cuba Classics.
Took a broad study of the whole scene there. And right now I'm making a cinematic documentary with David Soule, actor-director. Remember him? Old Hutch of Starsky & Hutch. And we're doing a documentary about the restoration of Hemingway's 1955 Chrysler New Yorker, which disappeared and was recently rediscovered. It's in was in almost derelict condition, but we're making the restoration happen and documenting it.
Oh, that's great. You're documenting that, and we can follow the progress of that documentary at ChristopherPBaker.com. Christopher, when you're traveling in Havana, there's bicycle taxis. Is that something that is fun to take advantage of?
These business taxis, yeah, they appeared on the scene after the collapse of the Soviet Union when transport ground to a halt. They were essentially rickshaws, if you will, three-wheel bicycle taxis. And some of them are quite extreme in their design, but they're a lot of fun. And
there's a lot of improvisation, isn't there? Is this?
Everything in Cuba is improvised. Yeah, absolutely.
What's the term? Hecho in Cuba?
Hecho in Cuba. Made in Cuba.
Made in Cuba.
Here's another one for you. El Cubano inventa. The Cuban invents.
Cuban invents. That's, I guess, the embargo stimulates local field expediency. Just on the streets in Havana, is there freedom of expression? Can you talk to people comfortably?
Well, certainly you can talk to anybody you want. Freedom of expression, absolutely not. No Cuban in his right mind would in public say anything derogatory about the government.
And how does it feel late at night on the streets in Havana?
Quite safe. There are certain areas that I'd be very cautious about going around, but for the most part, it is a very, very safe city, and it's got this incredible ambiance, low wattage lighting, and an amazing night scene, of course, with the salsa and the jazz clubs and the old cars running around. And of course, there have been very, very few buildings have gone up since the revolution.
Yeah.
So it's another sense of this Hollywood stage set.
So there's more of that time warp than just old cars. Everything, because of the economy and the embargo and lots of complicated reasons, it's just a otherworldly experience. So Christopher, let's just say I've had a beautiful experience in Cuba. I've done the countryside, I've done Havana, I've been on my bicycle taxi. And I want to just finish off at the Tropicana. What's the Tropicana like today?
Oh, this is a no-brainer to end a trip. The Tropicana is the biggest cabaret, Las Vegas-style cabaret in Cuba, and it was opened on New Year's Eve, 1939, and is still going strong. Open air, 200 performers, sexy showgirls, the finest salsa bands, etc. It's very much of a tourist entity these days and not cheap, but my gosh, everybody loves it.
It sounds great. Christopher Baker, author of The Moon Handbook to Cuba, thank you for providing all this information to those of us who want to go to Cuba and to those of us who can find a way to get there. Best wishes.
Thank you, Rick.
Up next, Germany's our destination for a little fresh air and exercise. A tour guide from the Rhineland offers tips for German-style hiking on the country's extensive network of trails. And we'll find out how you might even earn a medal for all your efforts. We're at 877-333-RICK on Travel with Rick Steves.